Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have Talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Or you can reach me via Skype. My Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters, my podcast account there, the one that you can find all the various feeds and announcements for the podcast is SFU On Call. That's SFUONCALL. And of course, I have my personal account, Paul Franz. So to find me there, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. It's PaulFranz. And of course, my business account, which is Franz Games. You can find me at twitter.com/FranzGames. FranzGames. And of course, this lovely Talkcast gets turned up podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And just a reminder also, if you want to, you can follow us on YouTube. Well, kind of follow us on YouTube because I do a live stream. I do leave that live stream up. So if you want to, you can listen to it. You can watch what you can watch. A lot of that's the chat room. But in addition to the chat room, I also, the first podcast of the month, I will examine the Shapeways miniatures that have been released for that month, and I actually can see something. And no, I don't record my own face just because I think people would go on screaming into the night. Quick news from ADB this week. They finished up Hailing Frequencies and Communicate number 54. They were released last week. Also, due to Steve and Leanna being out most of the week, not much got done on their plate. And then, of course, Steve Petrick was busy working on SFB updates, quality control, and also on the Gormaster Starship book. Gene was busy managing the Facebook pages, of course, probably keeping things running while Steve was, you know, at the hospital and all. Also doing various uploads to Shapeways and making sure Shapeways site still works, at least our portion of it, because invariably he has problems with uploading different models to Shapeways and them not working and then have to be tweaked and all that. And of course, making sure that we have no spam on the BBS. Moving onward, of course, we have the Council of Five Nations. Just want to announce the winner, and the winner of the SFB tournament from the Council of Five Nations is David Zimbars. Congratulations, David. You have won it. And for those who don't know about the Council of Five Nations, Council of Five Nations, they have an SFB tournament. At this point, to my knowledge, it's the largest live SFB tournament in the country. At least I've not heard about any other SFB tournaments being run. That's the largest one that I know about. If there's some one that you know that's larger, you know, that goes greater than 16 players, please tell me. Because of so far, that's the largest I've ever seen. In fact, they've gotten, I'm not sure if they got up to 32, but they've gotten close at one point. This year wasn't nearly as large just because of some people weren't there, like me. Not saying that I would make up that big of a difference. I'm just saying that, you know, I'm just one of many that were unable to make it this year. Moving on to the Masters tournament, you know, one of the many SFB Online tournaments, Peter Bikia sent out some emails like I did and Andrew did. And we have two games which have not completed round one after all these months. I'm really tempted at this point to go and talk to them and just have them dropped from, you know, talk to Andrew and have a couple of them drop, because I know like game 1.116, 1.16 I haven't heard anything from them. I'm not sure if Andrew's heard anything from them since we've sent out notices to them. I think 1.3, we actually said, oh, you know, we forgot about it. And I said, well, you got time. Do it now, you know. I'm not sure. I'm assuming since we're sending them out more emails because they haven't said anything, I'm assuming they haven't gotten together on that game yet either. So hopefully we can get that done and keep this going, because I know it's taking a long time because people get busy with other things, and I hope to move it along a little bit faster. Okay, moving on to the Rat 48 tournament run by Ron Brennmeyer. Round 2 is finally complete. That's good to see, because there was one game that was to be played when I last talked to you people. And that is actually complete. When it comes to the round 3, we've only had one that's currently completed around 3, but it's just good to see some progress in the tournament. I'm hoping to see a lot more progress. Please, people. One quick thing also when it comes to online. Okay, going on to the online client stuff. Not much has happened, though. I did record a tutorial on the SFU Online Client Channel. So if you look for the SFU Online Client Channel on YouTube, I forget the actual URL short thing. It was awful. I'm not too happy with YouTube at the moment when it comes to selection, because you can't select your URL. At least I've not found any way of changing it to be something that is more readable and more what I want it to be. But I understand it to a certain degree, but it makes it hard to do it. I'm sure then you have Cyber Squad and the whole nonsense, you know, that kind of thing. But anyhow, if you search for that, I did create a group selection tutorial on how to use it in the SFU Online client, at least for the SFU section. So you can choose the groups and how they work and so forth. So take a look-see there. It's a nice little tutorial. So if you don't know how to use group selections, go over there. And really, really cool. When it comes to the recording stuff that I was working on my last left you, haven't got a chance to go back to it. I've been busy with other things, including last week where it's like I was gone most of the week where I actually have time. So I was gone. But anyhow, when it comes to the recording stuff, I actually did record quite a bit of the Council of Five Nations game, starting like turn 2 going past turn 4. So I'm going to use that as like a test save to see if I can get it working maybe a little better. Certain things, obviously, I can't improve. But, you know, at the very least, I can work out some of the issues with recording, because I've got a decent recording as a test. In addition to my minor test that I have for just going through to see how the whole thing works, make sure the whole thing works right. Some of the recordings, it's kind of weird how it works. But moving onward, there's, when it comes to the library report, there's not much progress there. That's, you know, still no progress. Completed conversion still is 2,426, and yet to be converted is 906. With percent complete be 92.8. That's one thing I need to look at, is actually what needs to be converted, and more to the point, what are Omega, what are if there's anything with fighters. I would love to do fighters with really cool backgrounds than the current ones. Because one, I think it'd be great to have them consistent. Two, I think it'd be really cool to actually have something that looks like the fighters. You know, just has to be a background, you know, a silhouette, a nicer silhouette than we currently have, you know, the sketches that are currently done. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have, well, me, we have Dave, we have Russ, we have Matt, we have a whole bunch of people in the chat room. And actually, I'm going to do a quick check over here, and I don't see anyone in the Yahoo chat. Still figuring that one out. Yeah. Well, what the heck? Let's start with a quick overview of that, because I know I've gone over this many times, and I apologize. Just because the one thing, okay, for us to move from talk show would be a big thing. No, I have YouTube chat. Sorry, Russ. I mean, YouTube chat. Oh, geez, Yahoo chat is dead. Because Verizon killed it. Thank you very much. Just like, AOL, IM, God bless its soul, that it's also dead. So, I've not made a decision yet, just because of, I know it's a big thing if we're going to move off TalkShoe. I understand that people currently are having issues with TalkShoe itself. So, currently we still have the YouTube stream. No one's currently has joined us in the chat room there. The obvious issue with YouTube chat is that you must log in. There is no anonymous guests and so forth. Obviously, one thing we could do is move to Discord. There's only one thing I don't like about Discord, to be honest. It's a weird thing to say. But Discord is kind of like Slack. And at the moment, I'm less liking Slack every day. Just because it seemed, compared to Discord, Slack just seems to be bulkier. It just has a feeling of being bulky and just all in one thing that you use for communicating, you know, which in my mind just, and of course it doesn't, for me, it doesn't help me that currently I'm using Slack at my job. Since I'm using Slack at my job, when I think of Slack, I think of my job, my daytime job, I think in that context of sharing information, what projects are you working on? What kind of things are you doing? And that's why I just feel like Slack, it reminds me of this heavy thing that you use for, it's great for what it does, which is great for communication, great for collaboration, virtually, because you can share all kinds of stuff, which is fantastic. Oh, understood. And Russ says his votes for TalkShoe or YouTube, but not a fan of Discord. And I understand that. And sorry, I got sidetracked there for a moment. But the one reason why I don't like the idea of going to Discord is because Discord, like Slack, the chat is maintained past the time that you use it. So overall, so if we, obviously the bad thing about moving to YouTube would be that it requires a login. The good thing about going to YouTube, it requires a login. So, that's the funny part, is that, a month ago, maybe more at this point, I think it was a little more than a month, we had basically a spammer. No, it's not really. It wasn't really a spammer. It's a guy. The way I feel like it was a kid out for kicks, because that's one thing we've had problems in the past with TalkShoe, in that every once in a while you get these kids that come in, say stupid, sometimes racist, sometimes just, I don't know, moronic things. And then leave. Or they'll stay around unless you block them. Now, of course, the current problem with the current interface is that you can't do that. The only way you can block people is make sure that you have invites to the people that you want, and then everyone else gets blocked out. Which, that's one thing why I like the original TalkShoe interface, because it had that flexibility. It really was designed, in my mind, to handle working as a talk show interface where you have people in the chat room. You can, I mean, it was designed from the way it was great. Functionality speaking, I think it had it dead on. Beauty, was it beautiful? No. Did it need the updating? Oh, hell yes. Compared to what it was. But it worked. And it worked great. At least, you know, well, it worked good. You know, obviously, current one favors heavily on Chrome. And if you're not a Chrome aficionado, then you're not going to like it. Just because of it works best with Chrome. And in the case of me, I have to use Chrome to use it for starting and doing everything for the actual show. You know, and obviously the one thing I know Russ had a concern about by moving off of TalkShoe is that we might lose the stream, you know, for the podcast. I'll double check because I have not done this for a while. Back in the day when we had the old interface, you actually could do this. And that's why I'm hem and hawing at the moment. And that is, feel pretty confident that we can take episodes, we can upload them to TalkShoe, new episodes, which have not been previously recorded on, you know, on TalkShoe itself. You know, so it wasn't live. It was basically previously recorded via another mechanism, but, you know, you were able to add that. Now, I'm not sure if there's any limits on that. I'll look into that. But overall, it is, you know, I like to talk, for the most part, I like to talk to you. And at the moment, to be honest, that it, other than that one incident, we have not had issues with people, which is good to see, you know. So that's the only reason why I'm not running from the platform. I am concerned because there are some people that want to join us and cannot. So I'm concerned there. So, and of course, the biggest issue currently with the YouTube is that, at least for me, is that we don't have an official YouTube channel. I mean, because we don't have one, I haven't been there long enough. I don't think it's that I haven't been there long, because I've had an account on a Google account for many years. You know, I'm not going to say 10 years. It might be 10 years. It might be since I've started the podcast. But overall, I think that, the issue is that we until you get, like, I think 1,000 subscribers, you can't have your own, what are those things called? The URLs. Like a vanity URL, that's it. Because I'm thinking vanity plates. So this makes it harder to find us. That's all. And that's one of the good things with TalkShoe, is it makes it easy to find us. They just say, okay, go. Here is the number, 17702. People go to the website. They can find us. So in my mind, that is definitely one of those benefits of TalkShoe. And also we can have people can actually find us. You know, that is something that cannot be discounted, which is the ability to find us. It's kind of critical to things. So, and obviously also one of the other benefits currently TalkShoe is that it also supports dial-ins. Because if otherwise, what we might have to do is more, because I'm as I mentioned before, I have not tried. I'd actually have to get like conferencing software. I think I looked into it, and I think freeconference.com would probably be the best one to go for what we want to do with it. And I just have to make sure that people call that number instead of calling the TalkShoe number, and so forth. And there would be a minor issue with switching, but not that many people call in. So I don't think that would be a big thing. And obviously, as I mentioned, I give people at least a month's heads up if we actually decide to move off of TalkShoe. But in the meantime, we are here. And at that point, given that, I think we will continue using TalkShoe at least tonight. So I definitely... When it comes to Discord, I do have a Discord server for SAP Online, and one thing actually on that server is actually, oh, that's something I forgot to do. I forgot to post that this evening, which is the link to the YouTube stream, which is I at this point, what I need to do is actually create a process. Agreed, Russ. Russ is saying that he agrees that should stay until there's a really compelling reason to move. At the moment, the only compelling reason to move, as I said, is because there's some people having problems with TalkShoe. Here's the real concern. Those are the people that finally, after years, have spoken up. How many people have tried it and failed and just said, forget it? Because the whole idea is that you want... If someone wants to join you, you want it to be a very easy process. You know, it's like sales. It's the same thing. You don't want to require people to go through all these crazy steps to buy your product. Because if you have a competitor who take it's an easier process to buy their product, they'll buy the competitor's product just because ease of use, ease of buying it, you know. I've been trying to help. I definitely have encouraged people to use it. At the moment, there's not much traffic there. There are a couple of people that definitely have joined and stay on there full time, and I stay on Discord full time. Also, there is a SFU on call channel, which Russ and Dave and me, we use that to actually test out the possibility of using Discord for streaming. Instead of, you know, when it comes to audio, instead of TalkShoe. Because that's when we were having problems with TalkShoe. Because there was at one point, we did have problems with TalkShoe where there was at least one podcast I had to cancel because TalkShoe was not working right. Now, obviously, some of this stuff is in the past because of that was the previous software and I understand they've been acquired, and they were just trying to keep the old system working while they were working on this. Now, as people know, and I'm sure you remember, is that when we went to this, it was like, boom, snap. They gave us a week notice. And I didn't even know it that they were going to be switching until that day came. And I was like, what? That exactly did not thrill me because I have no way of telling people that listen to my podcast that at some point, you know, well, yeah, let's dial in. And the dial in has changed. It completely changed. The interaction changed. Now, you know, they did give us like a 2 weeks heads up on, oh, here, try this beta out. For 2 weeks, and then boom, they went live. It's like, what are you doing? You know? So, that one's still kind of, it doesn't rankle me. It annoys me to no end that there were so much in a rush, which concerns me. You know, and I'm just hoping that they'll continue to improve the interface. You know, some of the things that we have asked for, you know, that I think are completely valid things to ask for, like better controls when it comes to participants, a better way of actually seeing when people enter, when people leave, when people enter and when people leave the actual talk shoe room or whatever you want to call it, the live broadcast. So, anyhow, we're still gonna stick with talk shoe at the moment. I'm still mulling it over in my mind, but we'll just have to wait and see. Now, big surprise, I went on an actual kind of a retreat. Actually, the funny part about this retreat is that I was helping running it. So it's not given that I'm one of the people helping to run the retreat. It's not that much of a retreat for me. At least normally it wouldn't be. Actually, given the position that I was given, which was what it's called, basically it's a table secretary. We organized it so that what you could do is what will happen is that we listen to these talks, let's call them talks. And then we have tables, and what you would do is then you sit there and discuss what you just heard, And in that case, that was one of the things that previously, I'm one of the attendees at that point because I was at one of the tables because I was basically playing secretary. The whole idea is that we would then present a summary of what we discussed, so then we could share our thoughts with the other tables. So kind of first we share with each other, so with our tight little group, and then we'd share with the other tables, so that everyone would, all that cross pollination of ideas, which I think is great. So actually it was almost a retreat for me, which is great. Now, given that whole idea of retreat in the case of relating that back to SFB and SFU and all and gaming in general, it's like going to a convention, that whole idea, other than discussions, which there I know of. When you go to conventions, there are things like that where you have these talks, these discussions about a certain topic. Wow. Sorry. Dave just announced that, the Broncos are beating the Cardinals 35-3 at halftime. This is not a good thing. Now, for those people watching baseball, Boston's still winning 1-0 in the top of the fifth. And yes, I'm keeping an eye on the game. I'm not listening to it, but I'm just keeping an eye on it. But I'm mainly focused here. But anyway, so the question always is finding those kind of conventions. Because now, okay. This actually, it brings up a good question, which is that for games like SFB or any kind of game, I'm just going to focus on SFB because that's what we know. Could we do the same thing for a single game or a small collection of games? That is, basically, what we had was a relatively small group of people gathered together as a retreat, i.e. we went away, we stayed at a location. Now, obviously, this is not a cheap thing to do, but given that it was a retreat and so I'm not sure if we could arrange it for like a seminar kind of concept, because that'd be kind of what it would be. Kind of retreat for gamers, strange concept. But the whole idea of being able to put a, you know, it'd be a little bit different than a retreat in that it probably still lets you communicate, you know, still texting and all that kind of thing. The whole idea of a retreat is to turn off your cell phone, put them aside, boom. You turn them off, you don't communicate with the outside world. So you can do some more inward focused work, you know, learn more about faith and all that kind of thing. And, of course, if you're a Christian, you know, building a relationship with God and Jesus. But anyhow, could the same thing be done for like a seminar where you have a small group, let's say 30 people. Let's say 32. Nice little tournament there. And then what you could have is you have times of when people play, you know, give each day you have two play sessions, and then you have in between the playing sessions you have meal times, and possibly with, you know, after the meals you have like a seminar that you go to talk about tactics, talk about different things for either a game or multiple games. Because I would think for a seminar, what you might actually want is each day for each game session, everybody focuses on a single game. Everybody's going to play SFB. Everybody's going to play Ticket to Ride. Or everyone's going to play Puerto Rico. Things, you know, certain games that we all are going to play, we all enjoy, and we all going to play, and that's what we're going to do for 4 days. That's all we do. Now, I understand that that concept is hard to kind of, would it work? I'm not sure, you know. In the case of certain games, I think you could probably get people to do it. In the case of like, this is one thing I could easily see. And that is, I can easily see someone having a D&D seminar, and that's all they're going to play is D&D for the whole 4 days. The only reason I say that is because of, I've seen it for the Gamers of Winter, Gamers of Summer, and that the people playing, you know, the D&D people that come, they'll play it for 2 days straight, and they'll play it for a long time. And I can easily see that kind of thing happening as a seminar with that format where you have game time, then you have meal time, which is also a shared meal time. So people, you know, the whole idea is that you talk to people, you know, outside of the games. And then you have the seminars, which then you can have, within that, the whole idea of the seminars would be to encourage discussion. You know, not one big seminar about, you know, this is what, you know, obviously it would be about what transfer of knowledge kind of thing, where you were try to share what you know and what you know about whatever topic you're going to be doing. But then have the whole idea is then you have these tables. The whole idea is to encourage discussion about what you just heard, you know, and then possibly have the same idea, which is you have someone create a summary, and then you present it to all the rest of the groups. I said it's kind of a crazy idea. Do I think it could work? Yeah, I feel like it could work for certain games. I think for Dungeons and Dragons, yeah, I think you could do it. For SFB, maybe. Because, here's the good thing about SFB and the bad thing. The good thing is that we got really. I was gonna say ravenous, but I don't. I think that's not exactly the word to use, but highly. People who okay, we got people who love SFB. I mean, love the game. And I think they would be willing to do that. Now, obviously, the bad part is that the number of people are smaller compared to Dungeons and Dragons, compared to, I was going to say Fortnite, but I think that's an invalid comparison. Just because it's a computer game. You know, computer games are a total different matter compared to board games. So, it's an interesting idea, but, you know, and I think if we had the right number of people, at the very least, you could do it for at least one weekend. Be great if you could do it from, you know, if it worked, you know, continue to do it, because Lord knows there are things like, what was it? The B conference for, you know, for security. Some of these other unconferences. I think about there was a conference on programming, and it was I forget what it's been so long. Many years ago they ran it these programming guys. It was on Java, basically. But what they actually did was they would do something along those lines, to be honest, in that they would have a retreat of some sort. They would actually, they call it an unconference, because that's what it was an unconference. And they'd have it at a resort. And what you would do is, one, you could bring your significant other or family, and they could go out and have fun at the resort while you're there in different talks. You know, and these are unconferences. So what you have is a small discussion. You know, you bring up a topic, you talk about it for 10 to 15 minutes, and then after that, what you would do is then you'd have a discussion. After that point, because anyone who's gone to conferences know that some of these long talks, the long seminars that you have someone talking about a subject for 45 minutes, and then what happens is you rush off to the next talk, the next seminar. And in that case, you know, where do you get the most information, the most interaction? You get it in halls. And that's why there was a call for the whole idea of a conference. Basically, take all the good stuff that you get from talking in the halls and bring that into the rooms. You know, because invariably, when it comes to seminars, you don't have time to talk about the subject that you're learning about. You might have time to ask questions, but that's about it. So, I think that'd be a great idea. Maybe along those lines is that have a convention, a mini convention, you know, invite, have 10, somewhere between 10 to 20 people, you know, they all, you know, go to a resort, go to a beach, you know, someplace that basically a vacation spot. But the focus of it, you know, would be playing games. Now, obviously, that has to be your focus, and the other focus for other people, you know, you could be enjoying the beach, you know. And what you do is you set assign time each day to go and enjoy, you know, what also is there at the resort. But all the time you would explicitly set aside for playing games. It's an idea. The thing is, you have to really enjoy that game tremendously compared to, because I see the whole unconference thing, which is why you're sharing information, and when you're sharing that knowledge, you get jazzed about that information. I know I've gotten that way too. Certain information I can really get jazzed about, and I want to share it. I want to talk about it. You know, I want to exchange ideas with people, because that to me that's fantastic. Because that's, you know, of course, part of my job is that I work on certain things, and I would love, there's so many times I would love to sit down and discuss some of what I do with other people that are just as knowledgeable or better yet, more knowledgeable than me. Because I'm not saying that I'm really knowledgeable, like in the case, let's say, one of the technologies I use is Docker. Am my company going to pay me to go to DockerCon? I don't think so. But overall, you know, I think that, you know, that's the kind of thing I would love. I would love to say, okay, this is how I'm using Docker, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not looking for, you know, people to talk about Kubernetes or Docker Swarm and all these other things which are used for coordinating things. The next level, you know, I'm just starting out, you know. And Docker is one of those technologies that we're going to be planning on using, which is one of those things I have to work on the upcoming week again. But anyhow, enough talking about my job. On to the next topic. One thing that obviously just happened is the Council of Five Nations, which was a wonderful tournament. Unfortunately, I was going to make it up to Schenectady, New York. And one of the things that I always love to do when I've only gone up there once. On the way back, I went to this place, which I'm sure guys understand, which is, of course, Cooperstown, the Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame. Now, for SFB, currently, we don't have really a Hall of Fame, but kind of we kind of do, in that we have the Rated Aces. We consider them our, I was gonna say heroes, but I think that's taking it just a little too far. Of course, we have the people who got the gold hats, you know, in the case of Tournament Online, platinum hats. Those are some of the best of the best. And we all recognize those players, and I know that Steve Cole has actually, you know, got a listing of them. Obviously, I think what would be really neat to do when it comes to kind of our Hall of Fame is if we could actually get pictures of people. They don't even have to wear their gold hats; just have a little picture of them, you know, in a kind of the Great Hall, you know, a webpage, you know, which is something other than just a listing of their names. Was it a little too late for that? Probably. Because of, now, the big issue, obviously, is that we had, that this all came about, you know, the gold hat and all that came back before the whole technology of the web and all that kind of thing. And I don't think Steve Cole ever thought that, hey, then we might actually want to have almost a gallery of these people, you know, because to me what would be really cool is you have a Hall of Fame. This Hall of Fame has the people's, you know, their pictures, their accomplishments when it comes to SFB, and obviously when it comes to the gold hat, the write-up of that. Now, obviously, the big issue for that for Steve Cole is that it's copyrighted material. And that's what's put out there on the caps lock. Now, at this point, I don't think it really matters if someone's, you know, posts up a 20-year-old game, you know, breakdown. But, you know, it's copyrighted material nonetheless. But I think that would be kind of cool. Obviously, if Actually, that's going to something that should be interesting to see how it all works out, which is, of course, VR and AR, which I think everyone agrees that VR is good for quite a few, could be used for quite a few things, though it's still not mainstream. And to be honest, I think the whole thing about VR, and it, the biggest is people gonna have it, is that whole glasses thing. Because of some people are nearsighted, some people are farsighted. I'm farsighted. That means anything that's up close, I can't read. I can't read with a darn without my glasses, which is why I have a pair of glasses. And I also, they're bifocals. That sounds strange, but bifocals in that the top is mainly meant for computer reading. The bottom are mainly meant for really close books. So one that's supposed to be for, it's mainly focused for 3 feet away. The other one's focused on like 10 inches away. And my glasses are special. You know, there's times when you really want to feel special. In this case, I really wish I wasn't special. In that each eye has a different magnification. Yay! Which just reminds me, I need to contact the people who created my lenses. Last time, there's a service, an online service that'll create glasses for you. Actually, I have to check to make sure they're still in business. That was last time I had them created was like 3 or 4 years ago when I first got into archery. And that's why I need them, because I need them for archery, because I can't wear my bifocals for archery. Because the big issue is that, okay, if I look one, you know, through the tops, they're one magnification. Look through the bottoms, they're different magnifications. So just kind of just moving your head just slightly changes things. So it makes things hard to actually target. So that's why I actually have to call up my optometrist and get I'll probably have to stop by to get what is my prescription. You know, so that I can get glasses for like my upper ones. And as I said, since there are two different magnifications, thank you very much. I actually have to get the professionals. I can't just like go out to the dollar store to pick up a pair of magnification glasses. So there's a little chasing rabbits today, but I think the whole thing with VR, I think AR and VR are going to be really cool. The question is, and this is a concern, I think, which is how will that affect our vision? Because most of these glasses, most of these VR and AR, at least currently, they're emitted. So it's like, I'm not sure how many people out there have actually read a book on like an iPad or a tablet where everything's emissive, i.e. the lights are the way you're reading it, the lights are just directed the light right into your eyes versus an ebook reader, you know, like a Kindle, like a Nook book, like a Kobo. And I think even Sony has an ebook reader, but basically e-ink or even paper, you know, where it's all of the light is reflective. It reflects off the surface and then you read it from the light then comes in your eye from that, that reflection. So to me, I can't read on like my iPad that much, or I can't read on a computer screen for very long. Well, actually, I can on computer screens, but the iPads, you know, when I'm reading a book, no, I have a hard time doing that. When I'm reading on my computer screen, I'm usually not reading a book, which is a different story. And that's why I like reading on ebook readers or physical books. You know, it feels better on my eyes. And my eyes don't feel like they're being strained as much. Well, and just for those watching the baseball game, the Red Sox just got a 3-run home run. So now they're winning by 4-0. Top of the sixth. For anyone out there who've been watching the Red Sox, this changes the game plan for tonight. Originally, the game plan was just, okay, put Price out there. You know, if Verlander is as good as he usually is, we're not going to be able to hit him. Looks like they're able to hit Verlander. So, which means change of plan. Now we're going for the win. We're going for the kill. Because if Boston wins tonight, they're going to the World Series and they'll knock out the Astros. So before that, you know, they were only winning by a single run. So it's like, you know, makes it difficult. But anyhow, moving back, sorry for that minor baseball sidetrack, just because I just noticed that there was a home run. That's why I paused there for just a slight moment. But moving forward, this all comes down to communication, in my mind, because how do we communicate? That's, you know, VR, AR. It's about communicating information in a different format. The one thing that I clearly can see VR being used for, and I'm not sure how much is being used for this, and that is the whole idea of data visualization. You know, and it's like anything else. It's like reading a good book. A good book presents the information in a well-written format. You use the right words, use the right tone and all that kind of thing. Same for data visualization. As they say, a picture picture is worth a thousand words. I want to get the saying right. And there's only one minor issue with that saying. It's not a picture is worth a thousand words. A good picture is worth a thousand words. Because you can have a blurry picture of somebody, and that's worth nothing. But you have a good picture, a picture of, you know, a mountain with, you know, in the proper background, proper lighting. Unless it's worth a thousand words of describing that beautiful view. But all you're seeing is garbage. You know, not worth anything. And that's why data visualization is such an important thing. And getting that visualizing the data properly so you can communicate that. And as I said, it's all about communication. So, given that, what's one of the things that we obviously need to keep use to communicate, use to stay together and crazy idea. That is, I know that actually Les LeBlanc has been trying for a long time to keep things going for almost to a certain degree. SFB evangelization is a strange idea. That is, because here's the thing. Any evangelization, any way of getting out the word, what is the first requirement of that? The first requirement of that is that wholeheartedly you're excited about it, about what you're trying to present. In the case of Christian evangelization, is about loving Jesus so much that you want to share with others. I mean, really, this is not about just telling people about who Jesus Christ is, because I'm sure there's a lot of atheists out there that can tell you who Jesus Christ is, but they don't know Jesus Christ. There's so much more there, but people who are truly evangelizing, Christianity, are going to really, they love Jesus. They're all in for Jesus. In the case of a game, you have to be really excited about the game and how it works. Because that's one of the things that I've always liked about SAB. I'm not saying I'm an SAB evangelist, though. It's one of my favorite games, and the reason why it's one of my favorite games, and of course, I'm sure this kind of helps in this regard, and that is that I was introduced to the game earlier on in my life. So tied into the excitement, the understanding of how SAB works and how it plays was my initial, not conception, but my initial excitement about it, which was that it's a game which the rules describe a more realistic, quote unquote, realistic. How it's like saying science fiction is realistic. Actually, okay, let me back up on that statement. Science fiction. Listen to what that is. Science fiction. Science fiction is based off of science, but science pushed to its limits. Assumes this, blah, 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 blah. You go down that avenue. You go down that the track. How far would science go for this? Assuming you do this, obviously you can abstract it out. Not abstract it, but you can go leap further and further out. But you assume certain technology can be created and you move forward from this. The whole idea of case of Star Trek, the whole idea of a warp engine and how that works. But, it's one of those technologies that's to a certain degree can be, I'm not sure if that one can be considered science fiction. But many things for Ken Burnside, I think, what was it, David Webb? Yeah, I think it's David Webb. With on a Harrington series. And I'm assuming here, because I'm pretty sure that what Ken Burnside created when it comes to his you guys remember what Ken Burnside, the gaming system was called? I forget. But overall, the whole idea of it, I think Harrington is what some of Ken Burnside does with the whole idea of heat sinks and things like that, is science fiction. The whole idea, a lot of what his ships are based off of is science. You fire your weapons, that's gonna create heat. That heat then has to be somehow dissipated. And usually what you have is you have these heat sinks that absorb the energy, absorb that heat. And at some point, even those can only absorb so much heat to a certain degree, then you have to basically open up put your heat sinks on the outside so then they can radiate out and cool off, and then they can cool off and then you're good to go. And usually Ken Burnside explains to me, which is in that universe, if you basically open up your doors and bring up your, you know, put out your heat sinks, that's surrender. Because if anyone shoots them off your ship, you're dead. You know, you can't fire anything else afterwards, but, you know, that's a way of showing surrender. But anyhow, but then, you know, again, that's science fiction. Then you have science fantasy, which is these, you know, the whole idea of this, these universes that are created, which are have no basis in science whatsoever. And those are more, that's what are called more science fantasy in that case. So, where was I going with this? I don't remember. I got sidetracked by the whole idea of science fiction. But, you know, communication, you know, and the whole idea of being excited about, yeah, okay, I know, that's where, how I got there. Okay, I was talking about how realistic the rules were. But they make sense because another thing was, of course, they're coherent. And they made sense. Speculative future? Well, man, isn't speculative future still science fiction to a certain degree? I mean, at least the, what science fiction is supposed to be. What science fiction is today is more, it's not always science fiction. It's a lot of times it's science fantasy is what it is. But so that people don't normally separate the two. And if they clump it all together, that anything that is, has a technological basis. Anything that has a technological basis, people call that science fiction, and it's not really science fiction. It might be science fiction, or it might be science fantasy, you know. But anyhow, yeah, thank you, Matt. Another point, which is, again, speculative future, which is, I think that's definitely, I consider it as science, truly science fiction. Though somebody tells me that in terms today, if you want to actually call something science fiction, you have to call it speculative future to really define exactly what you're talking about. A story about a possible future when it comes to, you know, our future, you know, geez, that's awful. The wonderful TV show that I like so much. I forget it now. And I'm not talking about Mr. Robot. Dang. Where it goes from science fiction to science fantasy. And, you know, when it comes to, when we start getting into the aliens. Because I'm not sure. Actually, there could be still science fiction. I just don't know the basis of that of the alien technology, what that's supposed to be. But anyhow, moving forward. Dang. I feel... Yeah, Matt. Yeah, okay. Matt's saying that a lot of the Highline stuff he sees it as speculative future, and yeah, basically that's what it is. And I think you have to explicitly say speculative future because, as I said, the whole idea of science fiction has gotten watered down to the point where most people, when they say science fiction, it's science fantasy. You know, you have to say speculative future to clarify exactly the category of science fiction that you're talking about. So, anyhow, I think actually we will wrap up with that little discussion. You know, went all over the place today. You know, had a quick update, you know, on my thoughts on TalkShoe and the like. Talked a little bit about a crazy idea for a seminar weekend where, You just focus on playing games, you know? Oh, Dave, I totally agree with that. Dave's mentioning the science fiction, the Star Trek, science fantasy, Doom. Yep. I agree there. And finally, of course, the debate, the great debate about science fiction versus science fantasy, and how the whole idea of wanting to almost evangelize SFP, the whole idea of getting people excited as you are excited about playing SFP, about playing a game, whether it's SFP or FedCom or F&E or whatever, and bringing those people, bringing them to Jesus when it comes to SFP. And it's kind of crazy. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.